and of course the author of Philly Special, How the Philadelphia Eagles Won Their First Super Bowl, available on Amazon.com. Sal Palantonio, good morning, Sal.
Good morning, Pat and Joe. How's everybody today on this week in pro football, week 15? My friend Ron Jaworski likes to say, this is where the rubber meets the road, baby, in the NFL.
That is right. That is right, Sal. And I want to go back just 6 days, if I may, do a little last week in pro football. I said, like I'm in my usual John Facenda tone last week, that Carson Wentz needs to win a game that the Eagles are supposed to lose. So I want you to just give me two takes on this this game last week, and that is he couldn't do it. Right, and is that emblematic of the difference between the 2018 Eagles and the 2017 Eagles?
You know, you could go back to last year. There weren't too many games he won that they were supposed to lose. There's not too many in his career, Pat. That's a really good way to put it. I'm going to steal that from you. That's good. I like the way you phrased that, because that's the job of a franchise quarterback. You know, the quarterback is a dependent position, but there are times when the quarterback is literally solely responsible. One, converting on third down. This team cannot convert on third down and couldn't do it against the Cowboys. And two, getting the team in the end zone. You know, those two things are the quarterback's job. And that's not original thinking on my part. That comes straight from Bill Parcells and the Bill Parcells tree of head coaches in the National Football League. And you look at the quarterbacks who are in the Hall of Fame, who have been successful at a championship level, that's their job. That's what they have to do. Even a guy like Trent Dilfer for the Baltimore Ravens, and I like Trent, and I don't say that disparagingly, but he's not in the Hall of Fame, and he won one championship, but he did one thing very well. Converted on third down when the opportunity created itself. He got the team in the end zone. I'm going to use another Baltimore Ravens player, Joe Flacco, during their Super Bowl run. Converted on third down in Foxborough, won a game he was supposed to lose. Goes to the Super Bowl, does the same thing, converted on third down, and had 9 touchdown passes. No interceptions, Joe Flacco, in that Ravens Super Bowl run. That's the job of a quarterback. Flacco's not going to the Hall of Fame, but he did his job when it counted the most.
Right. Now, Sal, it's looking like this year that Carson Wentz is not going to get the chance to win any of those games that he's not supposed to win, because obviously the medical situation with his back and everything like that has started to play out. Looks like he's going to be missing a significant amount of time despite being listed as doubtful. What's your sense of how this situation's played out?
Well, let's look at big picture, little picture, which is what I like to do sometimes. Big picture is this, right, Joe? He's been in the league 3 years. He played and started in 16 games in his rookie year. He played and started in 13 games last year. And so far he's played in 11 games and started 11. So it's trending in the wrong direction.
Right.
And I asked Tyler, our intrepid Saturday morning producer, to pull up a Q&A with Doug Peterson yesterday. And if anybody was paying attention yesterday to Doug Peterson, of all the stuff that was said and not said, this, to me, was the thing that was the change in the status quo, if you will. The news in this news conference. I don't know if we have it.
We
if
do.
We have it, if we have it,
yes.
Let's play it and react to it.
To ask the question now, after 3 years and the injury, you know, situation that's going on, I mean, I think you guys can sit here and say that it's probably a red flag. A lot of injuries occur because of the nature of the sport. The violent hits of this sport, guys know exactly what they are getting into, even at a young age. And Carson's no different.
Now, it's important to know what question was asked. Mm-hmm. How concerned are you about going forward? The fourth injury at varying levels in 4 years. Now, he hesitated before he answered that question. There was a long pause,
mm-hmm.
a pregnant pause, Pat.
Right.
He should have said, no, I'm not concerned at all. He's a franchise quarterback. I have no concerns. He didn't say that, Pat.
No, he kind of, you're right, by the pause and by his answer, it kind of implying that he kind of signs on to it. You know,
he is a little concerned.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they should be concerned about it going forward. And, you know, the bottom line is this. Again, a quarterback's a dependent position, and this is no way to beat up on Carson Wentz. But the facts are the facts. You know, there's an old saying that came from Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the late senator from New York. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but everybody's not entitled to their own set of facts. And the facts are these. It's trending in the wrong direction. And looking at the future of the team, if you have to invest a lot of money in a franchise quarterback, you have to give yourself pause and you have to do a better job of protecting him and putting players around him and not putting him at risk. Those are all incumbent upon the organization to do that. I mean, the running back position is, it's malfeasance. That's the term I would use. If you're coming off a Super Bowl championship and you don't have a running back in the top 40 in rushing attempts and rushing yards in the NFL, that's malfeasance on the part of the organization.
Well, all right, so here's the second take, and it's a larger question, Sal, but it is relevant this week, is that, you know, with all this sideshow now going on, you have a team that 1 year ago won a Super Bowl, the first one in 60 years for this franchise, in the era of the explosion, the cathartic reaction, which is something to behold. And here we are, Sal, 15 weeks into this next season, and is it going away? Is that era, is that feeling, is that goodwill that was built up and debited on the balance sheet of the Eagles, how much of it is gone?
Well, you mentioned my book at the beginning of the show, and thank you for doing that. I'm humbled by the tremendous success of the book and outpouring of people reacting to the book. I have been doing book appearances since August 1st, well over 60 now, all over the Delaware Valley. And it went from euphoria to requiem. And it's almost like a wake. I go to these events. People still show up. And they want to talk they want to have a Q&A, have a discussion about what has happened. But you use the word cathartic. People now want a greater understanding of what happened this year. And for a lot of people, not everybody, but for a lot of people, the gloom of 2018 has almost eclipsed the euphoria of 2017. And that's sad.
Boy, sure is.
Now, Sal, we're kind of turning our attention, by the way, to some happier things, some fireworks that we saw on Thursday night as we watched Los Angeles come back again, back-to-back weeks that they've come back from 14 points down. Did you learn more about Los Angeles, or did you learn more about KC on the Thursday night game?
I don't want to have to choose, Joe, because that's a great question. I learned a lot about both teams equally. First of all, you know, that coach for the Chargers, he comes straight out of the Bill Parcells coaching tree. So you can see the way he coaches. He is tough. Boy, he's tough. And he's got that team on an even keel, and they run the ball, and they play attacking defense, and he's cut down on Phillip Rivers' mistakes, and it's a well-coached team. There's no question about it. And to go on the road, Thursday night, we've talked about it on this show all the time. The Thursday night road team is at such a disadvantage. And he had that team prepared, and it didn't matter in the fourth quarter on the road. They were down by 14. They came back. But Andy Reid also conspired to lose the game. I mean, the Chiefs are the most penalized team in the NFL, the most. They have the best record in the NFL, their most penalized team. 10 penalties for 66 yards, adding to the total. They only ran the ball 17 times. They only ran 53 plays at home in December. Can't do it. Can't happen. You know, one of the things, I'll bring up Ron Jaworski's name again. One of the things that Ron Jaworski taught me very early on was the VP, the Vermeil postulate for winning football in the NFL. Rushing attempts plus completions. If you're listening to this show right now, This Week in Pro Football, this great program, it's been on the air for nearly two decades. Just go back and look. Add it up. It's simple. Football is a simple game. Add the number of rushing attempts plus completions, invariably 95%. It equals victory if those two things add up greater to your opponent's total. And once again, on the road, a team against the Kansas City Chiefs, simple football, rushing attempts plus completions, and they beat the Chiefs. And it's not like the first time we've seen this with Andy Reid. I mean, it happens all the time. It happened in Philadelphia and it happened in Kansas City.
I know, Sal, and it doesn't bode well, I'm telling you. And you know, there's plenty of Chief fans in Kansas City that are thinking, oh, no. You know, everybody, this, you know, I'm sure they remember that Tennessee game well last January. But the other take, and it reared its head Thursday night, too, but the other take I want to hear from you is this officiating thing, is that the calls, and they're happening in national TV games. The Eagle-Dallas game last week was egregious. I thought the opening kickoff and the offensive pass interference penalty against Dallas Goedert.
Oh, by the way, I hate to interrupt you. I just got a bulletin from the Eagles. Carson Wentz has been ruled out. Just came across the transom, just momentarily, as you were asking your question, okay. Pat, and I apologize.
That's no problem, but it's funny it took that long. It's odd that it took that long.
But here's the breaking news from the Eagles. Update, : Carson Wentz back has been ruled out for Sunday's game in Los Angeles.
All right, and that's something that took that long to do it. But anyway, just let me finish the point. I want to get your take on the
Please,
fact.
Go ahead.
How big, Sal, how big? And it's not good for the NFL. No one says, oh boy, the officiating in the NFL is terrific. Let's talk about it. Now, it's only, if officiating's a story, it's a bad story. What is the league going to do about this, and how big of a problem do you see that it is?
Well, they try to tweak it each and every year, and it doesn't seem to get better. You know, I know the members of the competition committee, and they try to do a pretty good job, but it's not working. And there's three specific examples that I want to point out to real quick. One, there's no way the Eagles didn't recover that fumbled kickoff in Dallas. Come on. The whole world saw it. If there was any doubt, it was which Eagle recovered the football.
Right.
Two, Thursday night, that ticky-tack pass interference call called against the Chiefs in the end zone at the goal line in the fourth quarter, at the end of the fourth quarter, was, for lack of a better term, silly. It was misguided and silly that you would hand the Chargers the ball on the one-yard line like that with a chance to win the game. And thirdly, going back to last year, and I'll be in Pittsburgh on Sunday. I'm doing ESPN radio on the sideline. And I was there last year, week 15, and the Jesse James non-catch.
Right.
And that would be a catch under the new rule this year.
Right.
You know, they try to tweak it. They do their due diligence, but it just doesn't seem to get better. And because of instant replay and how good the camera angles are now, and, you know, but the bottom line is, in critical situations, we're not talking about holding calls in the second quarter. We're talking about a pass interference in the fourth quarter on the road that gives a team a chance to win the game. Come on, Pat.
I agree on that call.
Now, Sal, kind of following up on that, as the playoffs are approaching, the big uproar and the big concern in the preseason was how this lowering the helmet rule was going to change the way that the game was officiated, change the way that it was played, and maybe in some small part due to public outcry, that thing gets limited, and all of a sudden it's not as big of a factor over the course of the season. Is there any chance that because of what we've seen culminating in Thursday night's game with a big pass interference penalty in the end zone, that there's an easing of this as the playoffs approach?
Well, you know, that's kind of like a story that's been like 7, 8, 9 weeks old, Joe. I think the biggest thing is this, right? There have been a lot of different officiating points of emphasis through the season that started with the preseason, the lowering of the helmet. I have talked about on this show, and for some reason, no one else has picked up on it, the tripling of calls for illegal contact in the secondary that has changed the way the game has been played. Fundamentally, points are up astronomically. Then, 2 weeks ago, the league officiating department sent out a memo to take a point of emphasis for holding calls. So holding calls spiked big time in week 13, then came back down to earth in week 14. So it's wildly inconsistent the way the game has been refereed based on almost a month-to-month basis.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem for the league. It's a very, very visible problem and one that they've got to take a look at. Sal, I wanted to ask you, too, that we're talking with Sal Palantonio, the host of the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN. Sal, you got a big game there. New England is at Pittsburgh. Just a word about the Steelers. They've lost three straight by a total of 13 points. And you talk about a locker room that seems always to be in a semi-state of disarray year in, year out. What's your take on this game? New England, a 2.5-point favorite on the road in Pittsburgh.
Well, they're definitely missing Le'Veon Bell. With James Conner injured with the ankle injury, and I was told he was very limited in practice on Friday and extremely unlikely to play on Sunday. In the last three games, all losses, here has been the pass-run ratio. Called pass plays, 75%. Called run plays, 25%. Mm-hmm. Look at the top quarterbacks in pass attempts, Pat. Ben Roethlisberger, 1. Struggling to get into the playoffs. Andrew Luck, 2, struggling to get into the playoffs. Kirk Cousins, 3, struggling to get into the playoffs. Matt Ryan, 4, out of the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers, 5, not in the playoffs.
Right.
So in the top 5 in pass attempts are all right now either struggling to be in the postseason conversation or out of it. In December, and this is why we love this show, right, because this is an old school show. You got to be able to do two things in December, and this is what coaches and players preach all the time. You got to be able to run the ball, and you got to be able to play pass defense in the NFL. And I asked my colleague, Matt Bowen, on the NFL matchup show, give me a team, one team, that's playing sound, consistent pass defense in the secondary. And he thought about it, and he came up with three teams, the Bears, the Ravens, and the Seahawks. That's it. That was the list. And if you look at those three teams, they're all knocking on the door big time to the postseason. But it's few and far between teams that are running the ball cleverly, creatively, consistently productive in the running game, and playing pass D. You got to be able to do those two things to win in December and January.
Yeah, the Ravens, for example, giving up 206 pass yards a game. In this league, the way this game is played, that's astounding.
Astounding,
that
they,
yeah,
Pat. Yep. Astounding.
That they've been able to do that. So you're right,
Pat. I'll tell you what, Pat. I wouldn't want to play the Bears in the postseason.
That's fine,
I wouldn't want to play the Ravens in the postseason. Yeah. Ravens went, you know, nose to nose with the Chiefs last week. Of course, they didn't get it done because, well, you know, the Chargers have Rivers. And the Ravens don't. That's basically the bottom line.
That's right. That's right. And we were talking about that earlier. Who wants to go to Soldier Field in January to play the Bears in the playoffs?
No.
So, I mean,
who wants the Bears? The only team that I think is Bears proof in the postseason at home is New Orleans. I don't think anybody beats New Orleans in New Orleans at home in the playoffs. I just don't.
And they have the inside track to that one seed, certainly. So, all right, that's a nice segue to our top five here, Sal, brought to you by our buddy Pat McConaughey from Annie Mac Home Mortgage. He's a licensed loan originator at PA in New Jersey. So if you're thinking about refinancing your existing mortgage, lowering your payment, give Pat a call. He can hold your hand throughout the whole process. You can reach him at 267-474-6379. That's 267-474-6379. Annie Mac is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 338923. And I want to do there are five seeds that are basically locked up in the NFC. What I'm asking you guys to do is to forecast for me who's going to have the one seed, two seed, three, four, and five. Okay? Because the sixth seed almost doesn't matter. Somebody's going to fall into it and lose the opening week, probably in Chicago. So how about we go, I'll go first here. I think the seeds are going to be like this, top five seeds in the NFC. New Orleans 1, the Rams will be 2, Chicago will be 3. I think Dallas gets that 4 seed, Seattle 5.
So you have it pretty the way it is?
I have it chalk. Yeah.
Okay. I have it, without knowing what the tiebreakers are, which is kind of the big bugaboo here, I have the Rams 1st, I have the Bears 2nd, I have the Saints 3rd, I have the Cowboys 4th, I have the Seahawks 5th.
Wow, I don't know. I don't know if Seattle, if New Orleans could even fall to that 3rd seed. It's an interesting. So you have New Orleans maybe losing twice, Joe, the next 3 weeks.
They got Panthers, Pittsburgh, Panthers.
Okay, all right. Sal?
Well, I think they'll lose to the Panthers on Monday night because it's the Panthers' last stand. Where is the Pittsburgh game, Joe?
Pittsburgh games, it appears to be at home.
Oh, is it? Oh, you're right. It is. It's in New Orleans. New Orleans' last two games are at home.
Okay, well, the Saints are going to win 2 out of 3.
Right.
So I think, boy, the Saints could be going to the Super Bowl, people.
Yeah.
They really could be. I mean, you know, that loss by the Rams to the Bears was pretty important. I'm going to go Saints, Rams, Bears, Cowboys, and Seahawks, number 5. Yeah, I think the way it is now is the way it's going to be. Right. I think it's going to be very difficult. The only surprise that I see is the sixth seed. So Minnesota's got Miami. They're going to struggle to beat Miami because Miami runs the ball. Minnesota's going to struggle. The Panthers will lose 2 out of 3. If the Eagles, I'm doing this. If the Eagles beat the Rams, which would be totally miraculous given all the injuries on defense. The Eagles are going to the playoffs. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. If the Eagles beat the Rams, this is a play-in game as far as I'm concerned because they will beat the Texans. No one's concerned about the Texans here. Mm-hmm. Christmas weekend. Not concerned. The Eagles beat the Rams, they'll go on a 3-0 run. It's a big if, and they'll be the sixth seed.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.